To everyone who contributed to NHPR during our fall fund drive, thank you. Your sustained commitment to accurate, independent journalism makes it possible for us to bring you this essential community resource. If you haven't had a chance to become a new sustaining member or increase your monthly contribution by a dollar or two, there's still time to do your part at nhpr.org. And thank you again for your generous support.
Welcome to NHPR's Candidate Debate for New Hampshire's 1st Congressional District. I'm Laura Kanoy, host of The Exchange, along with All Things Considered host Peter Biello. These debates are produced in collaboration with New Hampshire PBS, and as we host these events, we are observing health guidelines. All four of us, Peter, me, and our two candidates, are in separate studios here at NHPR. All of us wore masks when we came into the building today. Here's our format. Each candidate will have 60 seconds to deliver an opening statement. We will then move to questions with 60 seconds to respond. Peter or I will likely ask at least one follow-up question or point of clarification, which will get 30 additional seconds. And in the case of a direct attack on a candidate, that person will be given 30 seconds to respond. Our candidates are the current Congressman, Democrat Chris Pappas. Before his election 2 years ago, he served on the state's executive council and ran his family's business in Manchester. Congressman Pappas, welcome.
Good morning. Great to be with you, Laura and Peter.
Also here, Republican nominee Matt Maurer. He served in President Trump's State Department and worked on global health issues. He's a former executive director of the New Hampshire Republican Party. And Mr. Maurer, thank you for being here.
Laura, Peter, thank you for having us. Congressman, great to see you.
We will start with opening statements, 60 seconds, now normally decided by an in-person coin toss with the campaigns. Obviously, we couldn't do that, so we are going for alphabetical order. And that means, Mr. Maurer, you go first, please, 60-second opening statement.
Well, Laura, thank you so much. You know, like a lot of folks out there, I grew up in a middle-class family. My dad worked in construction his whole career and actually was even a diver for a number of years, including as a diver on the construction of the Seabrook Power Plant. You know, my mom was a bartender for many years before just picking up odd jobs along the way when she could. Those are the values I learned, the value of hard work, seeing my folks leave the house at 4 a.m. to go out to a job site and come back after a long day. It's the reason I know why people work so hard for the money they make. It's the reason why I'm going to fight for those middle-class values when I go to Washington, D.C. Unfortunately, Congressman Pappas has left a lot of those families behind. You know, he supports an income tax increase in Washington, D.C. right now, which isn't surprising considering he supported an income tax when he launched his political career 20 years ago. You know, he's undermined our law enforcement at a time when they need our support to keep our communities safe. And I'll just also say this. I'm so glad that we had this debate today when we can still have an honest dialogue, because in 2 weeks, Congressman Pappas is about ready to benefit from $1.5 million in dark corporate special interest money to benefit his campaign. So I'm glad that we have an open and honest dialogue today. I look forward to the discussion ahead.
Thank you very much. And I'm sure we'll tackle some of those issues that you raised, Mr. Maurer, as we go through the hour. For now, though, Congressman Pappas, you have a 1 minute opening statement, please.
Well, it's great to be with you. I appreciate everyone tuning in, and I hope everyone out there is staying safe. Look, this is a moment of tremendous national crisis. We have lost 212,000 Americans to COVID-19, 444 Granite Staters. Many more have gotten sick. Our economy has been destroyed, and so many crucial issues that we care about hang in the balance. As I talk to constituents around the state, they tell me that they're afraid about losing their jobs, losing their health insurance, and losing loved ones. This is not the time for politics as usual. It's the time for us to figure out how we can all come together in this all-hands-on-deck moment. I'm someone who grew up here in New Hampshire, who ran a small family business. I know the values of New Hampshire, and it's going to take someone who knows this state to lead us forward. This is a time where we've got to find our sense of common purpose as a country. And it's not the time for the politics of fear and smear that Mr. Maurer is offering. I really look forward to the conversation about the issues that matter most to the people of this state, and I hope to earn their trust for another 2 years.
Well, let's talk about the pandemic and jump into our questioning with that first in mind. So, Congressman Pappas, to you first. As you know, 210,000 Americans have died from coronavirus. More than 7 million have been infected, including now a widening circle of people around the president, who everyone knows was hospitalized with the virus last week. What are two specific actions, Congressman, that the U.S. should have taken early on to mitigate this pandemic? And let's just say that you were in Congress at that time. You have 60 seconds for this answer.
Well, thanks very much for the question. This is a time of incredible national loss, and we mourn the loss of so many Americans, and it didn't have to be this way. The United States is about 5% of the world's population, has lost about 20% of the total COVID deaths from around the world. This administration has not trusted the scientists, has not lifted up public health messages. They've politicized things like mask wearing that could have saved tens of thousands of lives across this country. So number one, we were behind the eight ball in terms of the national testing strategy. And I've called on this administration to continue to ramp up testing. We are far short of where we need to be. We need to be doing about 3 to 4 million tests on a daily basis to keep people safe. We're only at about 850,000 right now. And secondly, we need to make sure we're doing all we can to support our hospitals and our healthcare systems. We see a great amount of financial strain on our healthcare system, and we need to make sure we're supporting New Hampshire hospitals and community health centers so they can help us in our overall response effort. This is within our power, and the United States is the greatest country in the world. We should be rising to the challenge. Unfortunately, this administration has not.
So, Congressman Pappas, you said we were behind the ball on equipment and testing. You were in Congress, so you had a role, perhaps, in being behind the ball. 30 seconds for that response, please.
We have provided significant financial support to ramp up testing, treatment, and tracing. We passed the Bipartisan CARES Act, but we have not had the leadership from the White House and the administration to deploy a national testing strategy. He said early on, states are on their own when it comes to testing, and that testing is a double-edged sword. We also need to pass additional COVID relief legislation that includes additional support for public health. But this president just yesterday on Twitter said, no compromise. He walked away from the table. That's wrong for Americans. That's not going to help us weather these next few crucial months.
Another question that came up from a listener about this, Congressman Pappas. Richard wrote us, masks are proven to be effective at slowing the spread of COVID-19. Do you support a mask mandate? And as you know, Congressman Pappas, we don't have one here in New Hampshire. So what's your response to Richard's question, please, in 30 seconds?
I do support mask wearing, and I think we should have mask mandates across the country because it's important that we're all taking that step to keep people safe. Most people in New Hampshire are doing it, and studies have shown that if we had compliance from almost every American, we would save 100,000 individuals by the end of the year. The administration, our public health experts, should be leading us in that direction. Unfortunately, politics is getting in the way. From very early on in this pandemic, the president has not wanted to have an accurate count, has not wanted to test, has not wanted to trust the public health officials, and we've been hurt as a result.
So, Mr. Maurer, similar questions for you on the pandemic. Recognizing your background in global health when you worked at the State Department, what two actions do you think, Mr. Maurer, the federal government, including Congress, should have taken earlier on to reduce the toll we are now seeing? And you have 60 seconds, please.
Sure. Well, I appreciate it, Laura. And, you know, unfortunately, we just heard a lot of politics coming from Congressman Pappas, where he's trying to blame and obfuscate, but not take any responsibility. Look, I've taken this crisis seriously from day one. It's why I was the first candidate in the country to call for travel restrictions to the United States, because we saw a shutdown of domestic travel in countries that were hotspots for this virus. As you said, I've worked in global health. You know, I helped take on our global HIV epidemic, working alongside Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx. I can tell you we need to follow the science and follow the data. And we also need to work with the private sector. We need to triple the number of tests that are available. We need to provide more rapid tests for companies and work in public-private partnerships to ensure that there's key supply chain areas that have access to rapid testing. We need to continue to invest in a safe and effective and reliable vaccine. That's going to be vitally important because in order to actually move our economy forward and in order to get back to some semblance of normalcy, we have to tackle the health challenges. We have a long way to go, but I'm confident that if we take leadership, take responsibility, invest in what matters, follow the science and the data, we're going to get there.
And Mr. Maurer, I'm sure you're aware President Trump has been very much criticized for not following the science, for disagreeing with his own scientists, for disputing and obfuscating the data. So if you were elected to Congress, would you have a chat with him about that?
Look, I'll have a chat with anyone about public health and the messages we need to put out. You know, I think it's very important that folks wear masks. I don't support a mandate for it, but I do believe we should be wearing masks. It's common sense. It's the science shows that it works. And so we have to make sure that we're following the data. We did that in our global HIV program. It's a program that has now saved over 15 million lives. And it's done that because you're able to move resources to places where it matters. That's what we need to be doing here for our COVID epidemic response as well.
And you accuse Congressman Pappas of blame and obfuscation. What do you mean by that? And then, Congressman, I will give you 30 seconds to respond. So go ahead, Mr. Maurer. Be a little bit more specific there.
Well, you saw on the outset of the COVID response in Congress, Congressman Pappas and Nancy Pelosi were trying to put a whole bunch of unrelated spending into a COVID relief bill. You know, a lot of my neighbors are small business owners. They own restaurants. I have a lot of neighbors who work in restaurants. They were hurt by this pandemic more than just about anyone else economically. And yet Congress was playing politics. It took weeks for them to pass the Paycheck Protection Program. It eventually expired for another week when 4.4 million Americans went unemployed. And now Congressman Pappas has had the opportunity for many months to get something done, and they haven't gotten anything done.
So that sounds like a direct attack. So under our debate rules, you do get 30 seconds to respond to that, Congressman Pappas.
Well, thank you. Matt Maurer was a political appointee in the Trump administration, so we should expect nothing less than him for becoming an apologist for the Trump administration's policies with respect to COVID-19. But when it comes to relief, I have been working overtime with my team to get out and about New Hampshire, to meet people virtually, to find out how we can help. We recalibrated the Paycheck Protection Program in part because of what we were hearing from small businesses right here in New Hampshire. We took that to Washington. We pushed our leadership to get a bipartisan bill on the floor that fixed that program. That's the type of leadership that I bring to the table, bringing people together. Unfortunately, Matt Maurer's has been with his president every step of the way throughout this pandemic. We need someone who is going to represent New Hampshire first, and not the D.C. special interest.
Yeah, and I do want to let again, in the case of a direct attack, which I am hearing, the other guy gets 30 seconds. So I would encourage you guys not to direct attack because you just give the other guy more time. I want to go to Peter in a second, but that did sound like a direct attack on you, Mr. Maurer, an apologist for the Trump administration. Where have you felt that the Trump administration did not do enough for this pandemic?
Well, I think the CDC...
30 seconds, please.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, Laura, I think the CDC early on should have had a more open source method to allow the private sector to determine the testing reagents necessary. Had we done that, we would have been able to ramp up testing more quickly. But Congressman Pappas has marched lockstep with his party from the moment he got to Congress. He's voted with Nancy Pelosi literally 100% of the time. That's not the type of leadership we need. We need someone who's going to go down to Washington, D.C., be an independent voice, not just some locked-in, lockstep, you know, typical politician who wants to just follow their party leadership every step of the way.
Well,
Laura, if I could
just
respond to that.
Every attack, gentlemen, extends this,
sure,
and we don't get onto the issues. So I would encourage you to refrain. Go ahead, Congressman Pappas.
Well, I think that's important because he throws that fake statistic around all the
time.
It's
online, Congressman.
The fact is, Matt knows this, and he's not telling you, that Nancy Pelosi barely votes. The Speaker of the House doesn't usually vote on legislation. She's voted a few dozen times. I've taken more than 900 votes in the House. 600 of those have been bipartisan. Every time I introduce a bill, I look for a colleague across the aisle to introduce it with. And of the 34 bills that I've written and introduced, more than half of those have been introduced with Republicans. That's the way to get the job done, and that's the way to deliver results for New Hampshire.
Okay, I want to turn it over to my colleague, Peter Biello. Go ahead, Peter Biello.
Thank you very much, Laura. Let's hone in on the economy a little bit, and we'll start with a question for you, Mr. Maurer. President Trump has recently offered mixed messages when it comes to the next round of COVID-19 relief aid legislation. Previous infusions of such aid money were supposed to support businesses and individuals across New Hampshire and the country. The question for you, Mr. Maurer, and you have 60 seconds to answer. Assuming negotiations resume at some point, should the federal government continue with these same kinds of infusions of cash into the economy?
Yeah, look, I think everyone needs to come to the middle of the table and get something done. It's what we expect of our elected leaders down in Washington, D.C. And unfortunately, we're not seeing that right now, in part because of a lack of leadership from Nancy Pelosi and Congressman Pappas, as well as others. We need to be having discussions, and we need to be moving forward to expand the Paycheck Protection Program. There's nearly $100 billion that's sitting in the second round of Paycheck Protection Program that's currently inaccessible by our small businesses. We need to make sure that they have access to it so they can continue to pay their employees. I'm really concerned for the restaurant industry, as weather gets colder, that they're not going to have the ability to continue to stay open and actually provide customers with the service that they need in order to keep their businesses afloat and their employees employed. We also have to make sure that states and local governments are being reimbursed for expenditures related and surrounded by COVID. You know, I disagree with the administration on FEMA's decision not to reimburse school districts for PPE. That needs to happen as well. It's something I'll fight for down in Washington, D.C. Unfortunately, we have not seen the current incumbent do that.
And same question to you, or a similar question to you, Congressman Pappas. What is the government's role in providing financial assistance to American businesses and individuals? You have 60 seconds.
Well, thanks for the question. And just to correct that last point, with respect to FEMA, we have been leading the effort in the House, pushing our leadership and working with colleagues to try to ensure that FEMA can reimburse expenses related to COVID, including law enforcement costs and local education costs, as they should be doing. There's a contrast between the two of us on this, though, because Mr. Maurer does not support direct state and local aid that could deal with the lost revenue that we're seeing.
True.
So that puts the jobs of our teachers, our firefighters, our police officers in jeopardy. We're fighting for comprehensive COVID relief that is dealing with all aspects of this situation, including additional support for our small businesses who are struggling. Now, as a New Hampshire small business owner, I know that it's going to be a lot of months before we're back to where we need to be. So we should be providing additional support for our businesses who are losing revenue and who are struggling to keep workers in place and keep their doors open. Our state economy is driven by our Main Street businesses, and they have unique needs. We've got to make sure all tools are on the table, and that's why I'll continue fighting for them in upcoming relief legislation.
Mr. Mowers, you have 30 seconds to
respond. Thank you. Yeah, because once again, Congressman Pappas is using this Washington, D.C. playbook. You know, look, Congressman, you can make up and redefine your own record. Please don't make up what I believe in. I believe that we need to support local and state governments with the funding necessary that they've expended because of COVID-19. That's what I've said publicly from day one. So please don't mischaracterize that. The challenge we have right now is we need to get our economy going. And in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of economic uncertainty, you're currently pushing for the largest tax hike in American history that would actually stall our ability to bring our economy back. So if we want to talk about what's going to move the economy forward, a tax hike ain't it, and your proposal would hurt our economy, not help it.
Well, can I correct that? Because
Congressman Pappas, yes, 30 seconds.
I'm not pushing for a tax hike. I'm pushing for bipartisan, comprehensive COVID relief. And I'm disturbed that the administration has walked away from the table. I'll continue to work with Republicans and Democrats, as I've been doing these last few months, to make sure that we get the relief that is so essential to ensure that our small businesses, our families can weather this storm. You know, I was at a small business recently in Hooksett. The owner, Bill Forbes, was telling me he never thought he would need government help. But boy, was he glad that we connected him to the PPP. It saved 12 jobs. We've saved 123,000 jobs in this district. Mm-hmm. That's what we can continue to do if we push the politics aside and focus on what needs to happen.
A new question for you, Congressman Pappas. Do you agree with Vice President Biden's proposal to raise taxes on anybody making more than $400,000 a year and that corporations should pay, in his words, their fair share? You have 60 seconds.
Well, there's no reason that big corporations who are earning record profits are paying $0 in federal taxes. We need a fair tax code. Look, a couple years ago, the Republicans in Congress passed through a massive tax cut, trillions of dollars of our tax money given away to the wealthiest Americans and biggest corporations at a time when the economy was growing, and we should have been working to bring the budget back into balance. Now, those same Republicans in Congress are fighting us to give additional help to workers who are out of a job, to our small businesses who need assistance. So this is about priorities. Matt Mowers is a consultant who represents pharmaceutical companies and D.C. special interests. He just moved here in January to seek a political career representing a state he doesn't know. So this is about who's going to be standing up for the people of New Hampshire and their priorities. I support a fair tax code. I think that once our economy is growing, we need to get our budget back into balance, and everyone needs to pay their fair share, especially those at the top who are doing well.
Thank you very much, Congressman. And 60 seconds to you, Matt Mowers. You signed a pledge that you would not raise taxes on anyone. Do you agree with the $1.5 trillion tax cut passed along party lines, particularly given the fact that this contributed to the budget deficit, which passed $1 trillion in 2019? 60 seconds.
Sure. Well, I do support cutting taxes for working class families the way that that bill did. It doubled the standard deduction, which most middle income families are using on their tax forms. Congressman Pappas wants to repeal that, which would actually then cut in half the standard deduction for middle income families. He's also pushing for the largest tax hike in American history right now by supporting its repeal, and he's also supporting a 20% payroll tax hike. I got to tell you, clearly the Congressman went to Nancy Pelosi's finishing school down in Washington, D.C. for an answer he just gave. You know, the fact of the matter is what he said was just not true. He's trying to mislead, and he's trying to hide his own record, of which he supported an income tax when he first ran for office nearly 20 years ago. The fact that he's now pushing for higher taxes on working families. We need right now someone who understands what middle-class families have gone through because they've lived it. We need to make sure that we're actually supporting our middle-class families by lowering their taxes right now, not trying to raise them. And we need to make sure also that they can live in safe communities when we're trying to support law enforcement, not undermine them the way Congressman Pappas has.
Laura, right. Can I respond to that real quick?
Actually, we have to take a quick station break, Congressman, but we will get back to you when we get
Thank
back.
You.
Thank you for a very engaging first segment. We'll be back in just a minute. This is our first district candidate debate on New Hampshire Public Radio. Welcome back to NHPR's candidate debate for New Hampshire's first congressional district. I'm Laura Kanoy, along with Peter Biello. And this hour, we're talking with the Republican nominee, Matt Maurers, and the Democratic incumbent, Chris Pappas. And gentlemen, in just a moment, we're going to turn to what's often called the national reckoning on race that we're seeing in this country right now. Peter and I have several questions on this. But just before the break, Congressman Pappas, you felt like you were directly attacked. So I do want to give you, under our debate rules, 30 seconds to respond to that. And I would encourage both of you to refrain from attacking, because as I said earlier, each time you do it, the other guy gets 30 seconds. And I know you don't want to give him more airtime. So go ahead, Congressman Pappas, please.
Well, thanks. I just wanted to correct the record about taxes because this is an important issue. Look, as a member of the state legislature, I voted twice against establishing a state income tax. I don't support a New Hampshire income tax. And I've been leading the fight in Congress to stop Massachusetts from taxing remote workers who are working at home here in New Hampshire during this pandemic. I've also led efforts and co-sponsored bills to repeal health insurance taxes, to end the excise tax on heavy-duty trucks, and to support fair tax policy moving forward. So this is a critical issue, and it shows the desperation of Matt Maurer's campaign that he's stooping to this level of really just fabricating
I'm
issues.
Sorry, Laura, if I really could real quick.
Go ahead.
I mean, you know, look, here's the difference. Congressman Pappas has supported income tax from the moment he ran for office. He then said that those of us who oppose income tax, like myself and Governor Sununu, are brainwashed. That's not the type of rhetoric that puts politics aside, and that's not what helps small business owners or middle-income families. He's now pushing for the largest tax hike in American history. Congressman, you can try to rewrite your own record as much as you want, but it's very clear. Governor Sununu and I will work together to lower taxes for New Hampshire while you and Nancy Pelosi are trying to raise them.
So that has to do, when you say the largest tax increase in history, what specifically are you talking about, Mr. Maurer?
Well, he's looking at half the standard deduction for middle-income families. It would eliminate the increase in the child tax credit. It would also then increase rates for our small businesses at a time when we don't need that. And we're in the middle of an economic uncertainty. We're in the middle of a pandemic. And yet this is the type of lunacy,
Laura,
that's going on down in Washington, D.C.
right now.
Laura. You know, I just understand. Look, maybe I just have a little, you know, grew up in a middle class family, and Governor Sununu and I see it differently because we know the New Hampshire way is to keep taxes low. And Chris Pappas wants to raise taxes.
All right.
Laura.
So I'm going to give Congressman Pappas 30 seconds, and then I want to be done with the
sure.
tax conversation because I think we've explored it fully. And we do need to talk about just the oversized impact of this pandemic on Black Americans and other Americans of color, including economic hits and suffering from the
sure.
virus itself.
Thanks,
but
Laura,
go ahead, Congressman.
No, I don't
seconds,
support
and then we'll
taxes
be done with the taxes.
I don't support raising taxes on working people, especially during this pandemic. And I don't
need
a lecture on New Hampshire
okay,
values.
Let him finish.
I don't need a lecture on New Hampshire values and what makes this state special from someone who just moved here to launch a political career. The fact is I'm fighting in Washington to stop unfair taxes on the people of New Hampshire. I'm also fighting for state and local aid to make sure we don't see huge increases in local property taxes because of a disruption of revenue to our local budgets. That's something that is a difference of opinion between myself and my opponent. I'm going to continue to fight for that in Washington.
Okay, so gentlemen, we do need to talk about the outsized impact that this pandemic has had on Americans of color. As you both know, Black Americans, members of other minority groups are much harder hit, much more likely to get sick and die from this virus. Congressman Pappas, to you first, name two specific actions that you have taken or that you think should be taken to alleviate this disproportionate suffering. You have 60 seconds, please.
Well, we see that in terms of the statistics here in New Hampshire, where Black women are six times more likely to become infected with COVID than white women, Latinos four times more likely to be infected than Caucasians. And I think we've got to work to close the health disparities. That's why I'm a strong supporter of community health centers to make sure that we're increasing access to individuals in underserved areas of our state. And in addition to that, we've got to focus on the healthcare needs of people. That's why, as a state official, I helped lead the effort to implement the bipartisan Medicaid expansion program, why I'm a strong supporter of the Affordable Care Act and the essential benefits that it includes. Now, my opponent wants to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. He supports this administration's efforts in court that would result in 89,000 people in our state losing coverage. We've got to make sure that people in our state are covered, that they have access to the care that it meets their needs. And so we need to continue to make those investments and protect this foundational law from politicians like Matt Maurers that would get rid of it.
Well, and I have questions in about 10 minutes about the Affordable Care Act, so I'll set that aside just for now. But Mr. Maurers, similar question for you. What specific actions do you think should be taken to address the disproportionate health impact that this pandemic has had on Black Americans and other Americans of color. What would your approach be, Mr. Mowers, if you were elected to Congress? And you have 60 seconds for this.
Sure. Well, we just saw the congressman use a D.C. political playbook once again by trying to mislead folks. I want to expand health care access for people. And I'll tell you, I have experience doing that. We prioritize funding for health care access for folks both here in the country and around the world. It's vitally important. You know, I was just on a call the other day with a bunch of folks from federally qualified health care centers. And what we need to do is make sure that we're expanding access to comprehensive health care. Because I can tell you from someone who's worked in this field that by getting people involved in the health care center, not just for a specific diagnosis or specific treatment, but for a fully comprehensive plan, it leads to better health care outcomes. And so we need to be expanding those options. That's going to help us come back from COVID-19 as well. And we need to make sure that we're doing it for those who are disadvantaged and do not necessarily have the same types of access that, you know, others do. We need to make sure that anyone who has an ability to have access to health care should have access to health care. And we need to also lower costs for them as well.
And one more question about race, and then I'll turn it back over to Peter. Mr. Mowers, this is for you. Governor Sununu said after the recent presidential debate that President Trump fell short when given the chance to condemn white supremacy groups. The governor said, you can't equivocate. You got to be clear and firm. What do you think, Mr. Mowers? Did the president make the most of that national opportunity that he had right there on TV to disassociate himself firmly and clearly, as the governor says, from white supremacists? And you have 30 seconds on this,
Well,
please.
Look, white supremacy, neo-Nazism, you name any sort of hate group, they have no room for space for dialogue in our country. We need to call out extremism on all sides. What we're seeing right now is continued rhetoric and continued actions from extremist groups. From both sides of the political aisle and both sides of the ideological spectrum, we need to call them all out. This is something that should be able to unite us as Americans. I wish the president was more clear what he said to denounce them. I absolutely do. But I think we need to make sure as elected leaders, as political leaders, we're doing everything we can to condemn that types of violence and hate.
All right, Peter Biello, back to you, please.
Thank you very much, Laura. Let's turn now to the issue of policing and racial bias. Mr. Mowers, research shows there is reason to be concerned about police treatment of people of color. For example, researchers at Northeastern and Harvard University analyzed fatal shootings by police in 27 states, finding that among those who were, quote, unarmed and appeared to show no objective threat to police, nearly two-thirds of the victims were Hispanic or Black. What policy changes, if any, would you make to address this disparity? You have 60 seconds.
Sure. Well, let me say that anytime you have an innocent loss of life, it's a tragedy. And what we saw in Minneapolis was a tragedy as well. And thankfully, the criminal proceedings are now moving forward. That officer looks like he's going to be held accountable. And we do need to talk about certain reforms in individual police departments around the country. But I'll tell you, here in New Hampshire, our law enforcement is a model for the rest of the country. They already practice community policing. They haven't taught chokeholds in over 30 years. Unfortunately, Congressman Pappas this past June voted to strip away qualified immunity from our law enforcement. Now, let me tell you what that does. It prevents frivolous lawsuits being launched against them from the criminals that they arrest. And that undermines their ability to do their job. I've spoken to New Hampshire's law enforcement. They've told me it would lead to the largest resignation of cops in our country's history. It would make recruiting good officers, a priority for all of us, that much harder. It's the reason why the Manchester Police Unions, the supervisors and patrolmen situation, that endorsed Congressman Pappas 2 years ago from his hometown, endorsed my campaign, because he threw them under the bus for political expediency. I'll have their back.
I have questions planned for those issues specifically. We'll get to those in just a moment. But a quick 30-second follow-up for you, Mr. Mowers, because disproportionate minority contact by police is, in fact, a problem here in New Hampshire. So would you support more widespread training on implicit bias for both police and prosecutors? 30 seconds.
I would. And look, we have accreditation already for our law enforcement departments in our larger cities. We need it also for additional smaller towns, additional accreditation, and then also make sure the resources follow it. Most law enforcement I've spoken to welcome body cameras. We need to increase the number of body cameras and provide funding for that as well. But what we can't do while we're trying to address those issues and have meaningful conversation is then undermine our law enforcement the way Congressman Pappas has when he voted to get rid of qualified immunity and allow criminals to launch frivolous lawsuits against our police officers.
And Congressman Pappas, police groups have expressed concern about elements of the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act, which would curb qualified immunity, making it easier for people to sue police officers for damages. Many in law enforcement do worry about that. What's your response? 60 seconds.
Well, this is an important issue, and I voted for the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act after George Floyd was murdered. We have lost too many Black and brown Americans to violence in this country, and we've got to do all we can to create conversations on how we can improve things. And law enforcement wants to be a part of that conversation. That's why I've continued to talk with members of law enforcement in New Hampshire, as well as our black activists, our NAACP chapters, to see what we can do about this. Now, I filed legislation as a result of those conversations that's going to seek to make improvements. I actually passed a bill in the House already that creates a new grant program for law enforcement that would allow them to institute professionalism and best practices by allowing our local departments to get accredited. That's something that can help. So I'm looking to be constructive. Unfortunately, my opponent is only looking to inflame divisions, to look away from the problem that exists, and is not wanting to have the type of constructive conversations that can change things for the better. Everyone wants to see change, and it's going to take someone who can lower the temperature in the room, who can talk to all sides, and who can figure out where we can make the biggest difference to push forward legislation. I've been committed to do that.
I will give you a 30-second follow-up, Matt Maurers, in just a moment. But Congressman Pappas, a quick follow-up to you, and you have 30 seconds, because Matt Maurers has said, and others have said, that it is a disincentive for people to join law enforcement if indeed they do not have this qualified immunity protections. What do you say to that?
Well, I don't want anyone to, a police officer who's doing their job, who's following their training, to have any sort of frivolous lawsuit levied against them. I also don't want someone who has had their civil rights violated to not have recourse. So this is a complex legal issue. It lives in the courts, by the way. So we need to talk about statutizing something that can protect police officers who are doing their jobs while allowing those who have had their civil rights violated from having their day in court. I think we can create a better community and
Thank
a better future
much.
For this country that's inclusive.
Thank
but
you,
we've got to be willing
Pappas.
To do the hard work.
Mr. Maurers, you have 30 seconds to respond to what Congressman Pappas has said.
Yeah, that was a bunch of happy talk from Congressman Pappas. But the fact of the matter is that down in Washington, D.C., he voted for Nancy Pelosi's bill that would strip away qualified immunity from our law enforcement. Now, that's a position that's so extreme, so radical, that even Senator Shaheen, Senator Hassan, and leaders of the NAACP here in New Hampshire have opposed it, not to mention law enforcement. I just don't understand why, if Congressman Pappas wants to have this conversation like he says he wants to have, he didn't have it before he voted on the bill with law enforcement. He had it after, when the damage had already been done and his vote had already been cast. It already undermined law enforcement
thank
and their ability
much.
To keep our community
Peter,
safe.
Peter, that's
30 seconds for you, Congressman Pappas,
because
Mr. Maurers has said that you have undermined police departments. In response to that.
I continue to have extensive conversations before I voted for the George Floyd bill and after with law enforcement and with community members across our state. We all have a stake in this issue. And what came out of that was very practical legislation that I filed that can, I think, can really help address this. The George Floyd bill was supported by all the Democrats in the House, by a number of Republicans, too.
That's actually not
by,
true.
By a number of outside groups. And look, it was our best attempt to get the conversation going in Congress and to hopefully lead to a bipartisan compromise. Unfortunately, the Senate refused to act and nothing was done.
Thank you
well,
very
I
much,
refuse to do nothing.
But,
I think we've got to stay focused on this
you
issue
did
about
something
how we can
undermine law enforcement, Congressman.
Let's please turn to health insurance. Laura.
Yes, and we will have Senator Shaheen on as part of our debate series. So we'll definitely follow up with her on that bill. We'll also talk next week with the two members, the two candidates running for the second congressional district. But we'll set that aside for now because both of you raised health insurance earlier. And that is a very important topic for our listeners. Congressman Pappas, to you first. As you know, some in your party, led by Bernie Sanders, say it's high time for Medicare for All, a fully taxpayer-funded and government-run healthcare system. Others, including former Vice President Biden, prefer to build upon Obamacare. Which do you prefer and why, Congressman? And you have 60 seconds for this, please.
Well, we have got to build on the Affordable Care Act, make it better and expand coverage and lower costs. But we can't do that if it's constantly under assault. Look, this administration and my opponent has supported those efforts, has tried to administratively water it down, legislatively tried to invalidate it, and is in court a week after the election with oral arguments before the Supreme Court on tearing up the last vestiges of the Affordable Care Act. This is wrong. This is going to take away health care from 89,000 Granite Staters, end Medicaid expansion, and end the protections for individuals with pre-existing conditions. I won't go back. And people across New Hampshire tell me they don't want to go back either. We've got to focus on how we can lower costs. We've got to have a conversation about prescription drugs. We passed major legislation in Congress that takes on the drug companies, negotiates cheaper prices, and makes sure that each and every American has access to the life-saving medications that they need. Now, my opponent is a paid consultant for the pharmaceutical companies. So who's he going to be representing in Washington, the people of New Hampshire or the people that are paying him to represent those pharmaceutical companies?
Okay, I have another question about health care for you, Congressman Pappas, but that was a direct attack. So, Mr. Mowers, can you tell us about your work with pharmaceutical companies,
please? No, look, the only one who's receiving political benefit from pharmaceutical companies right now is Congressman Pappas. He's taken money funneled from massive pharmaceutical companies through their associations to his campaign. He's about ready to receive $1.5 million paid for by dark, shady corporate dollars, the same ones he hypocritically decries right now, are about ready to fund his campaign and prop up his failing political campaign. So, you know, Congressman, stop with hypocrisy here. People are fed up with Washington, D.C. politics. Get real, get honest, speak the truth, and stop misleading everyone.
Laura, I just want to clarify something,
Congressman. I apologize. Did you have contracts with pharmaceutical companies, Mr. Mowers? I've looked at your background. I know you worked with the state party and you worked for the State Department, but have you also worked with pharmaceutical
companies? I do social impact work. I work with companies that are trying to make an impact on our world and try to make it better. I work with a minority-owned, women-owned small business that tries to help other female entrepreneurs, mostly in the developing world. I have worked with some companies to try to improve access for HIV/AIDS patients who can't afford their medicine. I think it's a vitally important issue to expand healthcare access. And so I have worked on those issues, including, by the way, how we can invest more in developing research and treatments for those with post-traumatic stress, which is a very important issue as well.
For our veterans especially, and we've done a lot of shows on that. And Laura, Congressman Pappas, 30 seconds, please. What about this $1.5 million that Mr. Maurer says you are about to receive from pharmaceutical interests?
Well, that's absolutely not true. And I'm the only candidate in this race that doesn't take money from corporate PACs. I support fundamental campaign finance reform to level the playing field and put the power of our democracy back in the hands of ordinary citizens. And I think it's deeply concerning that we have a candidate here who doesn't know New Hampshire, who moved here for a political career, who was a political appointee in the Trump administration, and then cashed in on his relationships and is now being paid by pharmaceutical companies and D.C. lobbying firms. That's exactly what's wrong with Washington. That's the swamp. And that's why we need someone from New Hampshire who can fight to change
it. Well, and Mr. Mowers described his work. Didn't sound as swampy as you describe it, Congressman Pappas. But I do want to ask Mr. Mowers about health insurance, too, since that's what we were focusing on with you a moment ago. As Congressman Pappas said, Mr. Mowers, Republicans on Capitol Hill and the White House have been trying to repeal or dismantle the Affordable Care Act for years. As I'm sure you know, New Hampshire is part of a multi-state lawsuit defending the ACA. Governor Sununu said to, quote, just pull it away and repeal it without a replacement would be devastating for New Hampshire. So if elected, Mr. Mowers, would you join efforts to get rid of the ACA? And you have 60 seconds for this, and then we'll take our break.
Sure. Well, I agree with Governor Sununu that you cannot repeal anything without replacing it. And so that's why we need to continue to drive down health care costs. Because right now, because of Obamacare, because of the ACA that Congressman Pappas supports, you've seen some of the highest premium increases in history. It's hurting middle class families right now. We need to expand access and drive down costs. We need to push forward issues like price transparency so that folks know how much they're paying for procedures and operations. We need to make sure that we're holding accountable pharmacy benefit managers, which are currently have opaque agreements that drive up the cost of pharmaceutical drugs. Unfortunately, Congressman Pappas, as we'll see, has been bought and paid for by the pharmaceutical industry now. His campaign is about ready to benefit, despite everything he says. You can go on the ad reservations online right now. You can go to the stations and see it. It's all public record. He's about ready to receive $1.4 million of assistance to his campaign paid for by these corporate special interests that he decries. If he's concerned about corporate profits so much, I just don't know why then they're using those corporate profits to support his campaign.
We'll have to do some fact-checking on that and hopefully get that up on our website or put our newsroom on it. But just very quickly, Mr. Mowers, so you would support efforts to repeal the ACA, just to get some clarity there.
As long as we can replace it.
We will talk more after a very quick break. Coming up, more conversation with the first district candidates. Stay with us. This is New Hampshire Public Radio. Welcome back to NHPR's Candidate Debate for New Hampshire's 1st Congressional District. I'm Laura Kanoy, along with Peter Biello. And this hour, we are talking with the Republican nominee, Matt Mowers, and the Democratic incumbent, Chris Pappas. And Peter, let's begin this last segment with you.
Thank you very much, Laura. Let's talk about climate change. Mr. Mowers, you have the endorsement of President Trump in this race. The president has repeatedly said that he does not accept the science of climate change, even though the vast majority of climate scientists say that climate change is real and that human behavior is behind at least part of it. Do you accept this science? Please tell us why or why not. You have 60 seconds.
I do. I do think human activity contributes to climate change. I think it's an important topic. I mean, we all want to ensure that we have an environment that's there to be passed to the next generation. We all support clean air and clean water. I mean, my wife and I love going out hiking on the weekends. It's such an important part of New Hampshire and New Hampshire's economy as well, the tourism industry, which we need to protect. But what we need to do is also hold bad actors in the world, like China, accountable for the pollution that they put into the atmosphere. The fact of the matter is that efforts that Congressman Pappas have supported would allow China to get away with polluting our environment, continue to increase carbon dioxide emissions, and yet then shut down American businesses. That's not the right approach. We need to have common sense ideas towards this. This is something that affects all of us. And so what we can do is also ensure that we're taking proactive steps, like planting more trees. You know, we have the ability to probably plant about a trillion new trees by the year 2050 if we want, which will increase, clean the air that we all breathe. It's an important piece for our environmental concerns, but also for our safety down the road.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mowers. And 30-second follow-up. You've said that you believe in market-based solutions for climate change, those that cause economic good rather than harm. Can you provide a specific example? 30 seconds.
Sure. I mean, look, I support making sure that we have environmental impact regulations in place. I think it's very important because it is going to protect the natural beauty as well as the longtime economic vitality and also increase health and safety for people. What I don't support, though, is increasing these regulations to a point where we're driving out American businesses, the fact that American manufacturing can no longer cease to exist. I'm all for common sense restrictions and common sense protections, not onerous ones that let China get away with polluting the way Congressman Pappas wants to, and myself, who wants to make sure we're all doing our part.
Thank you. And I'll give Congressman Pappas a moment to respond, but a second follow-up on that. Is there an example of a particular regulation that were you in Congress, you would pursue? 30 seconds.
Sure. I mean, look, I think we're seeing it right here at our communities. I mean, I would move to actually make sure PFAS and PFO are put on the dangerous substance list. It's something that's been talked a lot in Washington, D.C., but it's not actually being done. I think it's a vitally important issue, especially one that affects our communities. I mean, my wife and I live right near the Merrimack border. It's affected communities in Merrimack as well as Bedford. It's also PFO has affected folks out in Portsmouth. And I've already had conversations with the EPA and Department of Defense about this, the need for them to have more federal investment to actually clean those up.
Thank you very much. Congressman Pappas, 30 seconds.
Well, thanks for the question. And the question was about climate change and policies to address climate change. And I've been leading the fight, a bipartisan fight in Congress, to take on PFAS, but that's a separate issue. What we've got to focus on is the existential threat that climate change poses for New Hampshire. We already see the changes happening to our shoreline, to our ski season, to our moose population. We can't bury our heads in the sand, and this is a moment for U.S. leadership. We need to be back in the Paris Climate Agreement. We need to be taking on China, but we need to be leading the world and finding our way through this. We need to be putting the science, the technology, and the economic policy in the same direction.
Thank you
very
much.
And if we do, the job growth will be tremendous, especially here in New Hampshire, for the development of clean, green energy.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about energy policy and climate policy. Congressman Pappas, as Congress spends money on roads and bridges, how much are these taking into account with climate in mind? You have 60 seconds.
Well, the transportation sector is the biggest contributor to emissions right now. So we've got to do a lot of work to lower emissions, to raise standards for automobiles, and to make sure that we're not just rebuilding what we have, but we're rebuilding it for the future. I supported a $1.5 trillion infrastructure package that we passed through the House. It provides a framework for investments in roads, bridges, rail systems. It uses cleaner and greener materials. We also have to make sure that we're responding to a changing climate and the severe storms that we're seeing in New Hampshire and across the country and ensure that our infrastructure is resilient for the future. We should be building out electric vehicle charging infrastructure here and across the country. We need to be incentivizing individuals to buy electric cars. That is the wave of the future. But we really have to be turning a lot of different dials at the same time, both in the transportation space, in the energy space, in efficiency, in the electric grid, in so many areas. And so as a member of the Transportation Infrastructure Committee, I'm hopeful that in January, with a new Congress, we'll be able to pass through a package that will create jobs and build the type of future that will be sustainable.
Our next question comes from a listener.
Hi, I'm Katie from Merrimack, and my question is, what will you do to ensure clean air and water for New Hampshire residents?
We'll turn to you first, Congressman Pappas, 60 seconds.
Katie, thanks for the question. I've been to Merrimack a lot. I've talked with local residents. We know that an industrial polluter has poisoned the drinking water of too many residents in Merrimack with these forever chemicals, PFAS, that they use in their industrial process. I introduced a bill when I got to Congress that would allow EPA to regulate PFAS under the Clean Water Act. We've known for decades that this is a cancer-causing agent, that it's very harmful to health, that it causes chronic conditions. We've got to do all we can to protect public health and go after the polluters who are making our air dirtier and our water less clean. I've also worked with folks at Pease, and it's really important that the U.S. military owns up to its responsibility for purveying PFAS, that it cleans up contaminated wells, that it connects people to safe, clean drinking water. Look, I think through this pandemic, we're understanding and appreciating that we need the basic necessities of life, clean air and clean water. Unfortunately, this administration has made our air and water dirtier. I want to hold EPA to account and make sure that everyone has access to those essential needs of life.
And same question to you, Mr. Mowers. You have 60 seconds.
Sure. It's vitally important that we protect our water and air quality because we all share in it, and we want to be able to pass it along to future generations. I've just said before about my position about making sure that PFAS and PFOA are moved to the dangerous substance list. It's something that's had a lot of talk in Washington, D.C., but not a lot of action. We need people to actually take action. It takes more than just a bunch of nice-sounding words to actually improve the quality of our water and the quality of our air. And that's why I've already had conversations with the EPA and Department of Defense to ensure that we are taking action and moving and encouraging additional federal resources to be used for it. The irony of all this is that while Congressman Pappas is here right now, talking about how to clean up air and clean up water, and he's talking about PFAS, his campaign has received money from a front group for 3M. So his campaign has actually received money from 3M, the same company that's being held in litigation right now for exposing the Merrimack community to PFAS. His campaign is benefiting from it. Again, that's the double speak that we're hearing from Congressman Pappas right now.
30 seconds, Congressman Pappas, to respond.
Well, he turns everything into a political attack, and that's just not true. I've stood with folks across this state that have brought our attention to this issue. And we need to continue to give voice to those activists that have identified the hazard that exists in our communities and make sure that EPA and DOD are doing something about it. Unfortunately, EPA has long had this action plan. They haven't acted on it, and we've got to hold them to account. It shouldn't be left to states like New Hampshire to figure out the regulations on their own. We need national drinking water standards for PFAS. That's something I'm fighting for and building bipartisan coalitions behind, and I think we can get it done.
Thank you very much. Will you return the money then, Congressman?
You've been attacked, Congressman. Please respond.
I don't accept any corporate PAC money.
And my record, their front groups.
I don't accept any corporate PAC money to my campaign. And I'm the only one who wants to get big money out of our political system.
I think we're going to have to.
We do have to move on. Quickly summarize your point.
You have my clock up, so I'm going to keep going for a few more seconds. And just to say, I've been leading this fight on the quality of our water, on making sure we're protecting our water and air. You can look at my record and see exactly what I've been up to.
All right. I think we need to do some campaign finance reporting. So we will dig into that, the exchange, our news team, I'm sure. I do want to move on to a topic that I know is very important to our listeners, and I know that both of you are thinking about, and that's voting. Congressman Pappas, to you first. The president suggested last month that he might not abide by the results of the election if he loses and felt the voting was fraudulent. He's concerned about the mail-in absentee ballots, he says. In reaction, though, members of Congress, the House and Senate, voted almost unanimously to affirm a peaceful transfer of power. How much more confident does that make you feel, Congressman?
I think it's dangerous that the president would even question a peaceful transfer of power. But I have been encouraged that there has been a bipartisan outcry to say, look, we want to make sure there is a free and fair election, that everyone has the ability to vote either in advance of the election or safely on election day, and that will respect the result. That's how our system functions. Unfortunately, so many of our democratic institutions and norms have been undermined by this president. And I think it's going to take people on both sides of the aisle to come together to support what is special about this country and our government. So we've been working to make sure that people of New Hampshire can get out to safely vote. We've supported funding through the CARES Act to allow the state to ramp up its absentee balloting situation. And I support fundamental legislation that would make it easier, not harder to vote. Too often we see folks that are wanting to pick and choose who the voters are, saying students can't vote or saying communities of color have fewer polling places. Well, we've got to stop that effort and make sure that the fundamental right to vote isn't questioned in this country.
Well, in terms of the absentee ballots, Congressman, over the summer, the Postal Service reported that several of its mail sorting machines in Manchester had been taken out of commission. So what did you do as a member of Congress to support the Postal Service in your district so it can process the mail effectively, including the ballots? And 30 seconds for this, please.
Well, we shouldn't allow people to be successful politically in undermining confidence in the Postal Service either, because the men and women of the USPS do a great job. I've been talking with them, but I have deep concern for the Postmaster General DeJoy and his effort to disconnect machines and slow the mail, not just for its implications on the election, but also for the packages, medications, and supplies that we all rely on through the United States Postal Service. The Postal Service shouldn't be for sale. It shouldn't be privatized. We've got to fight those efforts and provide them the supplemental funding they need, just like any other private business needs to weather this storm.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is, what did you specifically do as a member of Congress? I'm guessing you have some sway over how funding is put forward in your district for the Postal Service. So go ahead. Just a quick.
Well, this is a point in time when oversight is so crucial. So I've called on an inspector general investigation to look at the number of postal sorting machines that have been disconnected and how we can get those back online if that's possible. In addition to that, I've listened to the Board of Governors, all appointed by President Trump, who said we need $25 billion of supplemental funding. We've passed that through the House at least twice now, and we continue to need to see bipartisan support for the Postal Service. It's the most popular agency in our government, and we've got to make sure that it's there for us today and tomorrow.
Mr. Maris, some voting questions for you.
Sure.
Yesterday, the head of Homeland Security, the FBI, the National Counterintelligence Center, and the National Security Agency all said they were extremely confident in the security of our vote, no matter what method Americans choose. My question for you, whose opinion on the integrity of our voting process do you trust this year? The president and what he's saying, casting doubt, or the heads of these four agencies? And you have 60 seconds. This is a big issue.
Well, thank you, Laura. No, and I have great confidence, especially here in New Hampshire. You know, Governor Sununu and Secretary of State Gardner are going to do a tremendous job implementing and executing our election procedures. You know, we do it right here in New Hampshire. You know, we've expanded absentee ballot voting for those who are concerned about the COVID pandemic, are concerned about their own health and well-being. It's something that we should all encourage. We want to encourage everyone to go out and vote who's legally entitled to vote. You know, it's what makes a democratic process so special. And it's what makes sure that we all have confidence in our election system. And so I trust the experts on this, and I trust the fact that we're going to have a strong voting system. You know, I do have some concerns in other states where you see ballots, you know, sometimes thrown to the side of the road. You have seen that at in some states. I think we need to make sure as election officials that they're making sure that every vote counts because it values the integrity of the vote. But I'm confident here in New Hampshire that we're going to do it right, not to mention our local election officials, our town moderators, our clerks, who are doing a tremendous job this year, and as they do every year, to ensure that we have the integrity of the voting process here in New Hampshire.
Well, and to people who show up at the polls, and from what I hear, more people are planning to show up at the polls, Amnesty International has launched a new campaign, Mr. Maurer, calling on the nation's governors to ban guns at and around polling places, saying weapons could be used to intimidate voters. What do you think, Mr. Maurer? Should guns be banned at New Hampshire polling places? 30 seconds, please.
No, I mean, look, we want to make sure everyone feels safe and secure when they're in to vote, but I don't believe in banning someone's Second Amendment rights so they can then exercise their First Amendment rights. So, you know, I think it's up to right now, I mean, it's up to the moderators and those who make the decisions about how the voting process moves forward. I believe in continuing that way here in New Hampshire.
Gentlemen, we'd like to close out with a few more questions from our listeners, and I want to thank everyone who took the time to write in to us. That's great. For these, we'll just give you 60 seconds with no follow-ups. And Peter, go ahead, please.
We got this question from Roger in Hooksett, who asks, would you support the elimination of the Electoral College and have the president and vice president elected directly by the voters? Why or why not? 60 seconds, and we'll start with you, Congressman Pappas.
Well, thanks for the question. And I believe in one person, one vote. I think that's something we should take a look at. I've been considering that and having conversations with people about the Electoral College, which is really an antiquated compromise that came out of our Constitutional Convention when this nation was founded. But I think that it doesn't really get at what the will of the people is saying and communicating in an election. And I have great concern that we've had two presidents recently that have been elected without having a majority of the popular vote nationally. So I think we've got to be looking at how we can shore up our democracy to make sure that every vote counts. That's why some of these efforts to undermine confidence in the election or to put up roadblocks for people to exercise their right to vote, are so insidious. I filed legislation that seeks to protect the Youth Vote Act. We've seen instances here in New Hampshire, too, where young people have been targeted by voting regulations. I think we've got to make sure that everyone can participate here in New Hampshire, have their voices heard, and have the will of the people reflected in the result.
Thank you very much, Congressman Pappas. And to you, Mr. Maurer, 60 seconds.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised I'm sitting across the virtual table right now from a member of Congress from New Hampshire, not someone who's representing New York or California with an answer like that. The Electoral College protects New Hampshire's role in the electoral system. Our founders set it up because they saw in England that in colonial England that folks who are living in further away from metro areas and urban centers, that the will of their voice was ignored because politicians just focused on the will of the voters in the places with more where more votes were cast. So actually, I support the Electoral College. I support protecting it because it ensures that New Hampshire's voice is heard in the electoral system. You know, ideas like that Congressman Pappas is proposing. You know, it's the same reason his party's been proposing getting rid of the first in the nation status here in New Hampshire as well. Those are the types of ideas that will undermine New Hampshire's ability to have its voice heard federally. So I support the Electoral College because it protects New Hampshire's voice in the process.
Well, I don't think any New Hampshire Democrat or Republican is supporting getting rid of the New Hampshire primary. We all want to come together and support that. And I believe in one person, one vote. That's not a radical notion. That's something that should be reflected in our elections each and every year. And I think that the people of New Hampshire are really excited to get out and vote and exercise their right this year. And I'm hopeful we'll get a strong result.
Thank you very much. We did say we would not have any follow-ups to that question, but we appreciate the insight. Thank you very much. Laura?
And we will wrap it up. Gentlemen, thank you for an engaging and energetic debate. I really appreciate both of you coming in. And that does conclude our forum with the first congressional district candidates, Matt Maurers and Democrat Chris Pappas. Again, thanks to both of you gentlemen for taking the time. Also, a big thanks to my colleague, Peter Biello, our partners at New Hampshire PBS, and the many NHPR staff members who worked on this event, including RJ Perkins, Dan Colgan, Ellen Grimm, and Michael Brinley. Now, our next debate is Tuesday, October 13th, with the candidates for the second congressional district. Peter and I will be back, and listeners, I hope you will be too. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.